Blog Talk Radio. Yes, indeed. The good times, baby. It is Thursday, September 1st, and welcome to We Are Everyday People, Global Internet Radio Network. Yes, global. You can hear it anywhere in the world, so long as we have internet connectivity. South Shore Taj for Life show. It's a show that I've dedicated to my South Shore alumni after last year's 40-year reunion. I didn't want it to end, and I wanted to keep the spirit alive. So since I had this platform, I wanted to use it to as a means to keep in touch, keep the spirit alive, bring on some of the alumni, and we'll talk about just life back in the days and bring it up to life as it is today. I want to first, before I get into today's show, I want to thank, yesterday I did a show. It was an outstanding interview. I've been getting kudos from it ever since yesterday up till now. And I have to give credit to my guest on yesterday's show. I had the Montgomery sisters on. That is Robin Montgomery McLean, Dina Montgomery Noakai, Rachel Montgomery Rush, and we have their adopted sister who came up with them. And as a sister who I know very well, we were in, went to grammar school together and high school together, Sister Deborah Rogers Coleman. It was an outstanding show. I recommend you all listen to that show. We talked about some good things. We talked about back in the days, their experiences. I didn't even know that at one time while we were in high school that they had actually moved to Africa, to Ghana. And we kind of talked about that a little bit. We talked about Dina being a cancer survivor and a book that she wrote and that is for sale, and the name skips my mind. I tell you, I'm kind of speeding, but it skips my mind right now. If I think about it, I will mention it again. But check out that show. It's a really good show. It's a really good show. If you feel about South Shore alumni like I do, I recommend you check out. I recommend you check all the show out because we have some interesting people on, and it's really interesting to see where our old preppies, you know, how they view things back then and you know what they're doing today. You know, it's fun, it's touching, it's real, and you might even learn something. You never know. But today, we're going to keep it rolling. We have a brother here on who's been on the show a few times, brother who have a lot of respect for, has some really, really deep and interesting perspective. I know there was one time where we used to kind of friendly, respectful debate. And, you know, we weren't off distance from each other at all. We just had maybe a different opinion on some things, but it was always fun debating on this with this brother because it was always real and down to earth and respectful. So we have a brother here from the class of 76, popular brother in school. I remember him as being down to earth and had a tendency to make people laugh, but serious brother at the same time. But I want to keep it moving and bring on Brother Joe Stroder. Brother Joe, how you doing, man?
Hey, I feel like I'm winning, man. Life is so good to me. I'm so proud of you for providing this venue for us to get the word out of whatever, man. You're keeping up with the times, and that's so important these days, man.
I appreciate that, man. I'm trying to do you had a post that you wrote. And I'm going to read it in a little bit, and it just really hit me because it was so down to earth. But we'll get into that in a minute. But you've always had a tendency to be really, really deep and thoughtful in your perspectives. And I can tell that you just don't talk off the top of your head. You really put some thought process into anything before it comes out your mouth. And that's a good thing.
Yeah, well, I got that from – coming from South Shore High School, man, they laid a good foundation for me, man. A lot of them teachers there were there for the paycheck, but a whole lot of them were there for the growth, man, making sure that we turned out to be something and be somebody. That, you know, teachers like Mr. Howard, man, Mr. Shapiro, Mr. Lawson, Mr. Turner, man. Them guys made sure that we turned into productive citizens in this society, man.
And speaking of South Shore, when you think about South Shore, you know, we all have our moments where we kind of just sit back and chill and kind of go back in time or whatever. And What comes to mind when you focus on those days? What comes to mind to you?
South Shore, to me, man, was pep rallies under the school, under the North Building, Earth, Wind, and Fire, the talent show, Rufus, Chaka Khan, quarter parties with the red lights in the basement sitting on people's washing machines, man, with the little pluggers. Glenn playing Sweet Sticky Thing in the lobby at the concert, the posture contest, the Tide yearbook commercial where they would play at Division on the television show, the steppers, the guys that could step at all the dances, man, with their jacket over their arm, with the perms in their head.
Yes,
the basketball game. Man, smoking weed under the heater at the back of the North Building. Man, I could go on. There's so much for me, man, that helped shape my life, man. It helped me turn into the person that I am today, man. I experienced a lot, man. Remember the lunchroom cookies and cakes? Well, you brought your token. You paid a quarter to get that.
Yes,
stuff,
sir.
Man.
We
was all wearing, we were wearing Earth shoes and had bib overalls with big naturals.
Yes,
oh,
indeed. Hot pants,
yeah,
with the stockings.
It's so much, man. It was such a, you know, high school is the time of your life where the world gets a little bit bigger. And when you're in grammar school, you meet the few people in the neighborhood. But when you go to high school, you meet people from different neighborhoods. So your world starts to grow, and you meet different types of people from different types of households. And
exactly.
I had no idea that some of the people that we were going to school with was going through some of the changes that they were going through. Man, we had people that was raising kids, man. In our community, man. And South Shore, you could go the good way or you could go the bad way. You had choices there. You had choices you could make, that you could turn out to be really something great, or you could turn out to be something bad, you know?
Absolutely. You, who was your crutch, man? Who did you hang out with? Who could you depend on back in the days? Who was your boys or girls or whatever that your circle of who you can depend on if you were down and out? You just need somebody to lean on.
It was two different types of friends for me. I had my band friends, and then I had my football friends. And the band friends were kind of like aristocracy. They were mama's boys. But the football friends, they was down and dirty boys, man. And that's who we had the most fun with, man. That's where I learned a lot about growing up, from hanging with the football cats, man. And I would take what I learned from the football cats back to the band cats, man, and get them dudes in trouble, man. Yeah.
Now, who did you... share. I know I had Brother Frog on the show. I had Carl Fisher, Kevin Farmer, football guys, and who would share some of their football memories and their, you know, kind of golden moments. Do you share some of the golden football moments that you experienced being on the football team? Hello.
Keith?
Yeah, are you there?
I'm here. Do you hear me?
Okay, I can hear you now. Yeah, I'm sorry. I thought I lost you. Did you hear my question?
Yeah.
Okay.
Man, I was saying the football team, man, football was hard, man. And I didn't think I was going to make it because the coaches were so tough. But the coaches wasn't as tough as the players were on us. But, you know, they beat our butts to shape us up and turn us into something really tough and great. And with the discipline that they put on us, it also made us closer. So the camaraderie that was formed with the football team, man, we'll be friends for life, man. Just, man, in the locker rooms after halftime, after we would be losing, man, and watching Coach Turner come in that locker room, man, and you better not have your helmet off, man, because he was whooping heads, man. It was crazy. Everybody would snap their helmets on, man, because he would be, man, he would be ruthless. He would really be ruthless. But we would always, after practice, we would hang out, and we would always meet at the school on Friday nights and go from house to house for parties, and we would end up out at Puko's house, man. His mom would let us come out there. She would cook food for us, and we would be in his basement listening to Ohio Players, Commodores, Earth, Wind, and Fire, man, drinking apple wine, man, a jug apple wine, and just, man, just having a good time, man. His mama said, "Now y'all go downstairs. You don't come up here. Y'all stay downstairs, man." And but we had to get that last bus, that Jeffrey Express, back to the city before 12 o'clock, man. It would be Cynthia Jackson, Kim Brewington, Thomas Orr. He would be with us sometime. Chris Bradley, man. Daryl White. We had a lot of good close friends back there. Bernard Cooper. Man, we had great times out there.
Man, I remember all those names too, man. I remember all those names. You bring back memories, man. Wow.
Yeah, man. Wow. And, you know, you form bonds in high school that stay with you sometimes for the rest of your life, man. And I'm still friends with most of them people that I was hanging out there with, man. Some of them I talk to every day. Some of them I talk to every couple of weeks or every month. But I'm still close to them. Yeah.
Now, as far as the educators were concerned, was there any particular educators that stood out to you, or was there any particular advice that you were given from any of them that contributed to the person that you are today that you can appreciate now more than you could then?
Well, you know, the most profound teacher that had the strongest influence on me was Mr. Lawson. He always taught band, and he shared his life experiences with it while he taught, with his stories of World War II, man, and being over in Europe and hanging out with the guys in the Army. He was in the Army band, and sharing his experiences. And he made me want to see the world, man. He made me want to do the things that he did. And then he would hook up with us on the weekends and take us on fishing trips, man. We'd go up to Minnesota and catch muskie and striped bass and walleye, man, and cook it up at campsite, man. And he would tell us about women. He'd tell us about marriage. He'd tell us about business. He talked about everything. So he was like one of my stronger, influential teachers there. Mr. Shapiro was real close to me. He taught me a lot. I was in the creative writing with him and starred in the play that we had at the school there. They taught, Kim and Cynthia talked me into auditioning for it. I had never acted. But it turned out really well. We did a play called Crystal Blue Confusion that was really a good time for all of us. And it brought something out of me that I didn't know I had in me. I didn't think I could perform on a stage, man. And I learned something. They pulled something out of me. Mr. Mancino taught us a lot, man, down in the television studio, taught us about things to come. And he used to tell us, man, it's going to be VCRs in people's houses and they can make movies. I was like, man, come on, ain't nobody going to be able to afford this. that. But he saw that stuff. He told us. Right. He said, I tell you, man, it's going to be, they're going to be in people's houses, man. Now we doing it on the phone, man.
That's something.
Yeah.
You know, I remember
that.
I know you remember going to the Museum of Science and Industry, and there was this little section where they had that phone, that video phone there. We were like tripping out on something, the concept of being able to talk to somebody and look at them at the same time.
Right,
and,
man.
And like you say, man, look what we're doing now. We can do that shit on a wristwatch, on a phone, man. And you know the thing about it? They know what's happening 30.
What?
See, we haven't figured out 50 years ago. We're still trying to figure out 50 years ago the civil rights movement. But they already know what's happening 30, 40 years from now. They got that shit already down pat. You know, we need to catch
up.
They
got the social scientists, man. They know everything that's going to happen. Man, this is all a formula, man. They got this thing mapped out. They know what they're doing.
Absolutely
man.
Yes, they know what they are doing. Yes. Yep. Man, so you came out of South Shore and you went up to you went downtown to Columbia School of Broadcasting. Is that correct?
Yeah, I went to Columbia College, man, and learned a lot about television down there. And the great thing about Columbia College, everybody that taught there were people that were in the field. So I had Jim McFarlane was one of my instructors, and he was the director of Oprah's show. And when she came to Chicago, so I was at Oprah's show when she first came, every week I was down there. Howard Shapiro, he was the director. He directed the 1972 Olympics, man, and he won an Oscar, and he brought the Oscar to work and to school and showed us, man. He taught us about directing. Columbia College was a great, real great. It still is one of the great places, man, for people in theater, television, journalism. It's still a great place for that, man. But one thing about Columbia, man, nobody ever graduates. Everybody goes there, get what they need, and come up out of there.
Oh, really? Okay. But you're coming out there with a lot, though. You must be coming out of there with a whole lot. You know?
Yeah, you come out there with a lot, man. You meet a whole lot of people, man, that help you forward, you know, whatever your discipline is. They help you move in that direction. I remember I had one class called Opening a Bar. And in the class, we had to design a bar, and you had to do the breakdown of what everything costs, from the dishes, the flatware, the how much you're spending on drinks. And every week our class met in a different bar around Chicago. Every student picked a bar they wanted to find out about. Man, that's when I first learned about alcohol, because they opened the bar up at the end of the class at every bar we went to. Man, I would be so drunk at 11 o'clock in the morning.
Damn.
I got an A in that class.
Hey, something was working, right?
Yeah, man, that was a good class, man. Yeah,
now,
good school, man.
Now, you came out of Columbia College, and I know that currently you joined the Sheriff's Department. When did that happen, and what motivated you to become a part of the Cook County Sheriff's Department?
Man, I was working at O'Hare Field loading planes while I was going to Columbia College. And then my dad got me a good job at Sherwin-Williams. I was a chemical mixer out there on 115th and Champlain. I was out there mixing chemicals, making a lot of money. I was making about $1,500 a week, man. But the chemicals were killing me, man. And my cousin worked at the Sheriff's Department, and he told me to put in an application. I was excited about having a gun and a radio, man. And I filled out the application, and they called me, and I went through the interview process. And man, I've been there for 30 some odd years, man. But I'm through October 31st, man. I'm going to be retired and moving into my next business venture, man.
And before we get into that, being a police officer, which is what you were, Cook County Sheriff, police officer, cop, whatever they want to call it, you have had to have mm-hmm. had some hellified experiences and seen some hellified things. How do you detach yourself from becoming emotional to all this shit that's surrounding you pretty much on a daily basis, man? That you just or do you?
Well, man, that's one of the hard things about the job. Out of the graduating class from the academy with me, we had, I think, 47 people, maybe 17 of them committed suicide. They killed themselves because of the job stress, the stress that came along with working in that place. And everybody that worked there developed a coping mechanism to deal with the danger that came along with the job. Man, I would be scared when I got to work that this might be the day that I'm going to die. I've been stabbed. I had detached retinas. I fought so much, man. It was it is a very dangerous way to make a living. And what you had to do was put on like a Superman costume and pretend I play a role that I'm this tough policeman guy while I'm there. And then I'd have to take it off when I came out and become my humble, loving self. And people would say, I can't believe you do that for a living. You're such a nice guy. But when I would get to work, man, I was a monster, man. I was one of them guys you didn't want to cross, man. But
don't mess with him.
Man, we dealt with I came across all the gang leaders, all the gang chiefs. We fought, man, tooth and nail all the time, man. A lot of blood, a lot of madness, man. Seeing how the gangs control these young boys' minds, man. And it's a lot of money involved because they don't have options because they don't have education, and they have to hustle, man. And what they hustle is these drugs, and they make a lot of money at it, so it's very serious to them. And so that's why they killing each other now, man. It's about the money. I was at work last week, and I saw the lady come in with a shopping bag. She had $500,000 in cash coming to bond this drug dealer out, man.
Damn.
And that's his money. Yeah, man, this young black girl, man, coming in with a shopping bag. I was like,
$500,000
in cash. $500,000 in cash, man. And you know that's his money. He's coming to bond her man out. And he told her where to go get the money from, and he comes out of jail, man. And that happens every day down there, man. So them guys are making big money, man. So that's why they killing one another. That territory out there is everything to them. And that's the only way they can make a living. Uh-huh.
You mentioned. I'm gonna go back to that suicide rate, man. You said out of 40 some people, 17 suicides. Now, person who don't know any better, like myself, who never worked in that environment, and it's easy for me to sit back and say, man, why didn't they just quit? What is it about that environment that gets a person so locked in to the point to they will take their own lives on their head enough instead of kind of just saying, hey, let me find another job or something different to do? I mean,
man, you get caught up in the money, man. You get that job and the first thing you do, I watch them, they go and buy a car. Then they go and buy a house. Then they get into further debt and they can't miss one day's work. Or, man, they're getting ready to lose all that stuff, man.
Okay.
And they don't know how to get out of that that vicious cycle that they got caught up in. And one thing I told myself was that I would never let the county dictate my lifestyle. I always had another way to make a living. So I would not have that – stress bothering me. But I did, but I didn't have it to the point where I killed myself. I saw it help, man. I went to a therapist, and I still go to therapy, man, once a month, man, to keep things in perspective. Because,
yeah.
I mean, stress is a killer, man. What the people there did to cope with where they work, you either drunk alcohol. This was just the climate of the environment. You drunk alcohol, you did cocaine, or you had sex, or you ate food. And that was, those were the ways that you dealt with going to work. A lot of the female officers would have sex with the inmates, and their families would meet them on the streets and pay them for taking care of their son. The officers would come in drunk in the morning, come to roll call drunk, and the superintendent or the boss would tell them, man, go put him in the room, let him sleep that shit off, man, and he go and sleep, man. But after work, we would have big fights, man, where the tear would go up, man, and we'd be bloody. And every time we have a fight, we get off work and we go buy fifths of whiskey, man, fifths of vodka, and we would go to the parking lot and drink that stuff, man, like a victory party. And my therapist told me that they should have had on site a place where you go and get debriefed, because it was such, what you're dealing with is so stressful. How can you imagine fighting somebody, watching people get killed, and then going home and hugging your kids, man? And it's just, it's two different worlds, man. And that's what I was doing. I was coming home from this crazy world, getting stabbed and getting stitches in my mouth, and trying to be a father to my kids, man. My wife is like, you got to take us out. We got to go to the beach or something. Man, and you are so wound up so tight, man. It was just, it was rough on my family, man. It's rough. It was rough. The county took a toll on my family. Yeah.
I can imagine. If the murder rate, not the murder rate, but if the suicide rate is on that percentage, then the domestic has to really be high. You know, the domestic situations and at home issues, just like you said, man.
The DUIs, man. I know at least five guys off the top of my head that killed their wives and killed themselves, man. And I'm talking last year, man. Close friends of mine, man. And you'd never think they'd be the guys to do it, and you'd never think that they were that stressed out. I stand next to them at roll call the same day, man. They go home and just kill their wife and kill herself. One officer, he went home, shot his kid, shot his wife, and set his house on fire, man. I was with him that day. I was like, I saw him sweating. I was like, are you all right? Yeah, man, everything's good. Everything's good, man. Then we had an officer went out for lunch, went to the park and locked, shot himself in the head, man. It's just
man.
A bad place to be. So,
yes,
we had, employee assistance program where you can utilize and go and talk if you feel like you got problems, man. And then we had officers that used to go to the racetrack on their lunch break, man. They would bet their whole paycheck at the racetrack, and then they would have to come. We had people at the jail that were juice men who would lend them money so they could take the money home to their wives, but they have to pay back with a they were loan sharks, man. It was so much going on, man.
God damn, man. you need to write a book, bro. You need to write a book, man.
Oh, it's coming, man.
Because this is shit you just don't hear about this. You know, that's why I wanted to ask you about it, because I know that you know, being on the inside of that you just have seen some interesting things taking place. Whoa.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
on that note. Man, let's take an old school break, man, on that one. We come back, and I'm gonna talk about the business world you're into, and we'll go on to some current issues too. I really want to get your take on some things that are happening out here, man. But hang with me, brother Joe, and we'll be right back. Anybody want to call in? I see we have some callers out here already, but if you want to chime in, I see you listening. Just press number one, and I'll see it, and we'll bring you in if you want to be a part of the conversation. So hang in there, and we will be right back.
All right.
And we are back, and I tell you, if I said it 1,000 times, and we're going to make it 1,001. Ain't no school like the old school. Got to get our music back. Got to get our music back. Brother Joe, we have a caller that wants to chime in, man. We're going to see who we have here before we move on. And we have a caller here from area code of 321. Caller, are you with us?
Hello?
Greetings.
Hello? Hello?
Greetings. Hey. Can you hear us?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
We hear you loud
yes,
and clear.
I hear you.
Hear you loud and clear.
Joe Stroder. Keith Bledsoe. South Shore Tars.
Yes, sir.
Joe Stroder, you know who this is. This is Biff.
I know who this is.
I love this.
Talking about getting in trouble, man.
Look, Mr. Keith Bledsoe, thank you for putting Joe Stroder on here. I'm down here in Orlando, Florida. Couldn't wait to get on the phone. Really, I've been praying for my brother for such a long time, doing the job that he does. He's a unique guy. Everybody knows this.
Yes, sir.
He's the truth. As he calls himself, he is the truth. My brother Joe Stroder, God bless you, man.
Oh, God bless you, Biff, man. You funny, man.
Man, I just love you, man. What can I say?
Man, we did so much together, man. This part of the football, the closeness, man, we'll be friends to the grave, man.
Right, to the grave and past and beyond.
And there's one thing about us, Keith. If I don't see him for 5 years, when I do see him, it'll be just like I saw him yesterday. The conversation
right.
picked up right there,
let me ask you this, Brother Biff. Now that we got you here, and we're talking about we're taking it back to old times, coming up to where we are today. Looking back, give us a Joe Stroder story from back in the day, man? Football team or something that just made you laugh? Or?
Look. Didn't you hear what he just said? You heard what he just said, right? He told all the stories that he could tell about job and all that stuff. But it's a few stories we won't tell. But I will tell you. I will tell some stories. I don't know if you guys ever went to damn it, I'm having a senior moment. Well, hey, Joe, what was that club we used to go to?
The Golden Fort.
The Golden Fort. Oh, my God.
Yeah, downtown on Kinsey.
Oh, you know,
Kinsey.
Oh my God. Ain't telling no stories, but I'm still part of the Wild Bunch. So
the Wild Bunch. Man, we was wearing Nick shirts, man.
Man, way back then. And zoot suits.
Yeah, man. That was
the wide brim hats, platform shoes, horseshoe taps, all that.
All that. Listen to you. Y'all old, but y'all good.
Yeah.
Y'all old.
Man,
y'all
remember, we used to sneak out to class, out to school, and go to Arrington's on 75th and Stoney.
Oh,
I mean, Jeffrey, and get us some jug apple wine and get us some nickel bag.
Oh, stop it.
And take it in the hot house. Take it. Remember the ice skating house was out there? You put the ice skates on? We'd be in there rolling the joints, hitting and passing, man. Drinking the wine.
Wait a minute. Then go to the basketball game.
Then go to the basketball game.
Yes, sir. In the bleachers.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Anyway,
Do you remember the talent shows, man?
I remember you singing, what did you sing? Did you sing Keep Your Hands to the Sky?
I sang.
You sang September? You sang Fame.
Brother Joe, you were singing, man?
Yeah, Joe can sing.
Back in them days, you had to do everything, man.
I didn't know you was blowing like that, bro.
Just bust out some Algero for him. Bust out some Algero.
Hey, let me ask you both this, because you all mentioned going to the basketball game. Were you all part of the brothers up in the stands singing the You Can Have Watergate song?
Yeah, all that. Well, you can have
But you know the words.
No, we.
Y'all changed the words on us.
Hold on now. You're going to get us in trouble.
You can have
Walter Gates. Is this governed by the FCC or something? Some kind of broadcasting bill?
You can have Watergate. Just give me some moon and I'll be straight. Yeah.
Oh, I'm
remember
straight
that?
Now.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Oh, I remember
I'm straight
that.
Now. Did you hear what I just said?
I hear you.
Man, I remember. Remember we used to do the peanut song, Nuts, Hot Nuts?
Oh, get them from the peanut man.
Peanut man.
Y'all silly. Y'all going way back. Anybody else waiting to talk?
No, nobody's waiting to talk. Nobody's waiting to talk. They're listening, but not ready. I guess people are being shy and just listening. That's cool too. I appreciate those who are listening.
Right. They don't want to divulge any secrets because these secrets been kept for a long time.
Yeah, man, we did a lot of stuff, man. We can't talk about everything, but we did some great things. Remember back when we used to wear our hair in the ponytails, man, with our overalls on, with our football jersey.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And
yes, I love the Pep Riley.
Yes, sir.
I love it. But hey,
yes,
you guys are really on point. I haven't been in Chicago for such a long time. I chose to leave because of I raised girls. I have all daughters, and I didn't want them part of that. You know, I definitely wanted them to be able to have some sort of insight of what real life is around. You know, we all come from the ghetto. I'm not I don't denounce any of that. I love my black people, but I don't know what's going on in Chicago. I don't know what's going on with the police force, black people, all of that. I'm rediscovering being a Hebrew as you know as nature and Israel, like as a nationality, you know, and I'm really just trying to wake up from a slumber that we've been in for so long. You know, I'm really just trying to wake up. That's all. You
man,
know, I'm good. Life is good.
Man, these politicians got all this stuff planned out. They know exactly what they're doing. They released something like 6,700 inmates who were in jail that got caught up in the 70s for drug cases that
right.
they locked up. Now their sentences are up, so they came back home. And what they did when they came back home was try to pick up where they left off and sell these drugs. But all these young boys been out here making a living selling drugs, so
right.
they competing over territory. Who's going to sell drugs here? Who's going to sell drugs there? And they not listening to the gang leaders like they used to. These guys are all, they call renegades, man. They ain't listening to nobody but
to
themselves.
Nobody.
And the territory is this particular block that they live on, man. And they killing people, man. They ain't talking. They don't know how to fight. They killing people. And, man, they dropping guns off in our community left and right,
oh,
man.
Yeah.
They had a thing that came out. The police eyes only, man. They had a truck, a train load of AK-47s
yep.
in
yep.
back of White Castles on 79th and Stony, man, that they broke
That's
into. They stole 200-something rifles with ammunition, man. Man, that don't happen by accident. And it just happened three times already.
They didn't have to break into
right. None of our condition is by accident. It's definitely a planned situation, but we don't have to really buy into it. You know, it just takes a few people
man,
to wake up
about,
and just say some stuff. We don't have to buy into that. You know, white folks got guns. I live in Florida. It's a big gun state. They got guns.
Mm-hmm.
Black folks got guns. Mm-hmm. Everybody got guns, and it's not a lot of violence. It's a little violence here. It's some weird shit because Southern white people are just weird. You know, Southern Florida white people are very strange. But everybody got guns, and it's not that much violence because everybody, you know, everybody has a gun walking around. So it ain't, you know, everybody's careful like that. Yeah. So I don't have a problem with arming ourselves. I don't have a problem with speaking out. I don't have a problem. I've been on the government's list since I've been in the Air Force. You know, I have secret security clearance, still have it. You know, it never goes away. They always follow you. They always have what you say. So, you know, right now I really don't care. You know, whatever I say, you know, I'm going to say proper stuff, but I don't care, man. We need to, black folks, as we are, if we band together and just voted as a block one way, they would notice everything. We would have so much power, and money would come to our community if we would just do one thing together.
It's easy to say it, but you got to go up against all the deception, all the decoys, everything that they throwing at you, man. I go to the schools and I talk to these kids and I ask them, raise your hand. How many of you all know who a certain civil rights leader was? Man, none of them do.
Oh, my God.
Well, man, none of them do. And I'm talking about somebody, not nobody obscure. I'm talking about somebody like Frederick Douglass, man. And these are high school kids. They don't have a clue who this guy is. And I say, well, how many of you all have the Sony video game at home? Man, 97% of them raised their hands. They got them video games.
Well, we fall prey to the master plan. The master plan is out there. We buy into it, and we do all we can to defend it. And that's why this is by design. This did not just happen by chance. They know what they're doing. We don't know what the hell we're doing. But Brother Biff, I thank you for calling, brother man. I appreciate you calling
in. I'm glad we had a chance to talk about it. Thank you for having this platform, Joe. I love you. Whenever anyone of you guys in Orlando, please let me know your comment so you can stop by.
I'll be in Orlando this weekend.
Come on, man. Look, Joe.
I'll be in Disney World this weekend.
When y'all off air.
Is this your number? The 321 area code is your number, right?
Is that you? Yeah.
Okay, I'm right. I got it down. Okay.
Call me, Keith.
I'm gonna touch base with you. We'll see what's going on. All right, brother.
God
thanks for calling
you,
in, brother.
Love you. All right now.
Love you, man. Take it easy. All right.
Yeah. It's a good
brother,
man.
Yeah, glad to call you. I just happened to be in the Disneyland this weekend, man. Friday through Tuesday. So yeah, I need to give brother a call, see what's going on.
Man, I like your job, man. You traveling all over the world, man.
Well, I wish it was the world. It's the country, yes. The world, I wish. But I'm cool. I'm cool with what's happening. I'm all right with the country. It's all good. It's all good. I'm a fortunate brother, and I realize that.
Right. I was remembering when you were working at the hotel, man, while you were going to school.
Yeah, ain't that something? Yeah.
Man, that's a great thing, man. That's what people don't understand. You have to sacrifice in order to get something.
Man, I put that time in, and I sacrificed trying to raise my kid who was in high school, grammar school and high school. And, you know, it worked out beautiful, man. It worked out beautiful. Now,
good for you.
We've gotten off the police situation. We could talk about that forever. But what's happening with what's your business model now, man? What's going on with that?
My business model. Oh man, you know I came up with the term More Better Jazz, man. More Better Jazz, and I was doing More Better Jazz, and then my sound engineer took the name and ran with it, man. I had to go to court to get my name, and I've been in court for a year with it, so I finally won the case. I'm paying legal fees, man, for my attorney's doing such a good job, but it was totally unnecessary. Right now, I'm just waiting for the name to come from Springfield, that it's in my name so I can continue to do business. I don't want to do any business without having my paperwork in hand. So my attorney said it could take 3 to 6 months. So that's what I'm doing. But at the same time, I'm working on some things, but I'd rather wait for my paperwork to be in hand before I start going into them, you know?
Okay,
is
your intention to get back into the jazz situation that started at the House of Bing? And are you trying to get back into that mode?
Somewhat, but on a somewhat larger scale.
Okay, so that's what you don't want to get. That's what you were talking about. You didn't really want to get into at this time. You want to wait until some other things happen before you're going to go into that detail.
Right.
You
got to have all your paperwork in order before you start running your mouth, and then
you
end up somebody's doing it, and you like, damn, I said that. I shouldn't have said that.
Yeah, I learned
a lot, man. I learned a lot about business, man. I learned the hard way. You know, I rushed and said, okay, I'm going to start doing live jazz without handling no business, man, just making the money, paying the bands, and collecting money at the door. Man, there's more to it than that. Man, I wish I'd have taken business to South Shore, you know?
I learned a lot. Well, I hope you get back in it, man. I remember when it first started, and I would always say, man, you had a goal, man, there. But it looks, you know, hopefully you'll get part piece of that goal, a lot of that goal back. But I've always appreciated the concept of what you were doing.
Yeah, man, it was a great idea. I know, and it's still a great idea, and it's gonna be good. Just trust me, man. It's gonna be good because I'll be retiring, and I can put my whole day into doing what I do. Right now I'm just trying to hurry up and finish my stuff with the county, man, get my time out of there, and start collecting my pension money, and then I can move forward into my next venture.
Sometimes you
have to slow down. I'm sorry?
Do you plan on having an extravaganza for your retirement? You're going to have a little gathering? I'm sure you're going to do something for that event. Is that right?
Man, I don't know. That's one thing about working where I work.
Yeah.
One thing about working where I, man, you don't, you, I'm not really a social creature, man. And I live by myself, man. I got a real big house, man. I got a dog, and I never have company. I don't let people come to my house. I like living by myself, and I'm not a real, I mean, it's funny to say that. I'm putting on shows, but when I leave the show, I come and I'm by myself. And on my off days, I'm by myself. I don't really do a lot of social stuff, man. But
I'm the same way.
Yeah.
I can relate.
But I'm going to force myself for this reunion, man. I got to be there. It's really an important tradition that I'm glad that Candy and Oscar and Renee are carrying the torch and trying to make this thing work. So we owe it to them to put all the support we can behind it, because we've lost so many traditions, man, by the social poisons out here that's got us deceived in thinking this stuff is so this stupid stuff that's so insignificant that they making us think that it's so significant, man. But the bonds that you formed in high school, man, were very important to you when you were young, and they still are important, man. And it's like coming home to seeing some family members, you know?
Yes, sir.
And just to bless each other with your presence and pray for the ones who are no longer with us, man, to just share and fellowship. It's very important and very significant. It's very significant. So, yeah, anybody that wasn't thinking about going, I believe me, you should really go, because 40 years, man, it dwindles down. The class size dwindles down. You know, from the first reunion, you have 100 people, then you go to 60, then to 40, you know. So people, we're not getting any younger, man. So I'm hoping that we have a large turnout and a lot of people come to show their support. A lot of people don't think it's important. And to a lot of people, it ain't important. You know, that was high school, man. I'm way past that. But it really does mean a lot, man. It really does.
Yeah, it does. It does. Well, I'm class of 75. Yeah. I'll see you on Friday. I'll be there. No doubt about it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Man, we're gonna go back to, you were talking about me as far as world travel. Now I got the country down pat, but we're gonna talk about a world traveler. I think we're gonna talk about you, my brother. I mean, you've been hitting it lately.
Yeah, man. When you see too much, you try to do too much, man. And I seen too much, so I said I'm not gonna settle for mediocrity, man. So yeah, I've been to quite a few places, man. I had a business called Corporate Effects, and one of my clients was Accenture, and Accenture had offices in 120 countries. So I had an opportunity to take a sound system and computers, man, all over the world. I was in Singapore. I was in Melbourne, Lisbon. I was in Australia. I was in Madrid. I've been on just about every continent, man, every continent. And last week I was in Barbados, just chilling, man, just catching my breath.
When you think about the places that you've been, what places kind of stand out that really kind of caught your attention for whatever reason?
The place that stood out to me was Africa, Sierra Leone, man. Just before they were about to go to war, being on the continent of Africa was really, really mind-blowing. You felt like you belonged there. It was where you came from, and I hope everybody gets the opportunity to take a trip to Africa. I don't know. I didn't trace my roots to see what part of Africa that me and my family came from, but when I was at Sierra Leone, I felt like I belonged there because everybody was black. Everything was black. The newscasters, the president, the king, everything was black. And you just felt like you were supposed to be there. And as opposed to here, where you feel like you are not welcome here.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Man, it really mind blowing to see where they held the slaves before the ships came in, and how they led them into the castles, man, and to see the ocean where the ships came in. That was mind blowing for me. That was like one of the most important trips, and I think everybody should, if you get the opportunity, to go back home at least one time, because that is where we come from.
Well, that is definitely on my bucket list. I didn't know you'd been to Africa, man. I was talking to Robin Montgomery and Adina and Rachel and Deborah Rogers yesterday, and they were saying how their family moved to Africa about 6 months. It was an interesting conversation, and now you're saying you've been there, and that's what y'all are doing is motivating me to get it going.
Yeah, man. I was thinking of going to Ghana. But they were having some problems with their infrastructure, man. They was losing power all the time, man. They had a thing where if you moved as a U.S., a black American, if you moved to Ghana, they would give you land, and you came and opened the business, the president there. And, man, I was really considering that, man, because, you know, they don't want us over here, man. And if I can make a way to make a living over there, man, I'd be the first one to go.
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah, but last year I was in Monaco. I was in France. I was in Monaco and Saint-Tropez. Man, that was some beautiful stuff, too. But it lets you know how insignificant your money is, man. I was with some rich people, and they spend thousands of dollars, like we spend $12, man, and that was interesting to me, man, seeing these people with all this money.
Now, while you were there, how do you spend your time there? I mean, you just kind of chill at the beach, the clubs there?
In Monaco, in the daytime, I was on the beach, man, at the restaurants eating. the seafood and drinking the wine and eating that incredible bread, man. And at nighttime, yep, I was at the disco, man. I go to the discos and all the women would be by themselves in a herd and the men would be by themselves in a herd. And I'm like, man, I'm getting ready to get on this dance floor, man, and shake it up, man. And I get down there and start dancing with them, man. And the DJ, he see this brother in there, man. He start playing black music, man. And so I'm tired at the end of the night because I'm the only one dancing. The dudes don't dance over there. They just come and just look handsome, man. But, yeah, man, I don't know. I also had a good time in Rio, man, the Rio de Janeiro down in down on the Ipanema Beach, man. That was incredible. Seeing how beautiful some people can be, man, that blew me away. That really blew me away. I was standing on the corner, man, five beautiful women walking towards me. And they were so beautiful, man, and they took my breath away. I said, and they walked by me. And the policeman came to me. He said, "I see you like the boys, huh?" I said, "The boys?" He said, "Yeah, those were men." I said, "What?"
Oh, man, hell no.
That blew me away. That blew me away.
Oh, hell no. Now, where is this place at again? So I know to stay the hell
That's
away from
the Olympics. The Olympics were just held down in Rio de Janeiro on Ipanema Beach, man. Yeah, they got some beautiful people. Yeah.
Now, do you take a vacation like that on a yearly basis, a couple of times a year, or do you as you feel like it type of thing?
Whenever I get some money, man, that's when I go. Now, I'm planning the trip for January, going to the Seychelles Islands off the Northern Africa, man.
Really?
I found a good deal.
How long are you gonna be out there?
Until my money runs out.
Oh, okay. you're just gonna go wing it then, huh? I hear you.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Man, let me.
No,
go ahead. Go ahead, brother. Go ahead.
I used to be scared, man, to travel by myself, man. But then I met some girls from Sweden, man, and that they travel everywhere by themselves. And I was like, "You're not scared?" And they were like, no. And I think because of me being a policeman, I was so skeptical and nervous. Now, man, I go everywhere by myself. I don't even worry about it. I take the good Lord with me, man. And I haven't had a hard time no place I've gone, man. My personality kind of wins people over, man. You know.
So what's on your bucket list now? I mean, what is there anything out there that you haven't done that you'd like to do, or anything in particular that you have done that you can't wait to do again?
No, man. I just want
to do what you're doing.
Keep loving people, man, and having people love me, man. That's important to me, man. That's the most important thing. It's the same thing everywhere I go, man. I think people just want to be loved. I put it on Facebook last week or the other day. You know, I got the big house, I got the expensive truck, I got everything, man. But it don't mean nothing if you ain't got nobody to love you, man.
Yep.
In them other countries, man, and if you ain't got nobody to really share it with, it don't mean as much, you know?
And that's exactly what I was talking about earlier when I actually have the post right here. I was going to read it, but you pretty much broke it down anyway as to what it is. And I just thought that was just simple, not complicated at all, easy to follow if people would just follow that shit, you know?
Right. And you don't know when you're young. It comes with wisdom, man. And I was like, man, I cannot wait to get me no Range Rover, man. And, man, I got my money together, man. I got the limited edition, $135,000, man. And when I got the car and everybody's looking at you
I'm like, man, this is crazy, man. This is really crazy. And every time you go to take it to get an oil change, you're paying your $300. Every time you take it in for service, you're paying $1,200. For what, man? And I'm like, man, this ain't important. This ain't important. It ain't important. But, you know, people think it's all a facade, man. If you ain't got nobody to love you, man, that don't mean nothing. You gotta have people to love you, and you gotta love people. Love is so important.
Yeah, and that's why you have. I remember writing a post about 3 years ago to the something to the effect of the richest people being in the world are the most unhappy, and
most miserable.
Mm-hmm. They're the most miserable. Because you don't know who you got in your corner, who's true to you, who's for real, and
right, who likes you for you, you know,
yeah,
and yeah, these young football players, man, they hooking up with these chicks, but you know, would it be the same? Would this same chick hook up with me if I wasn't a millionaire? You know,
man, it's so I'm cool with a little moderate, my little moderate lifestyle. I'm all right. I'm straight.
Yeah. Well, I'm learning, man. I'm learning. Just, I need to find me a nice condo. I went and got pre-approved to buy me a nice condo. And I don't want to cut no more grass. I don't want to shovel no more snow. I want to find me a nice condo in a high rise with a lake view and pull my car in the basement and go up to my apartment. Don't be bothered, man. But
now you're gonna stay
with somebody.
You're gonna stay in the city, uh-huh. Chicago, in Chicago.
Well, I want to have an apartment in Chicago, but I'm gonna spend most of my time traveling.
I got you.
I'm gonna try to travel every opportunity that I get. I've been invited by so many people that live in different parts of the world, man, to come hang with them, man. When I retire, I'm gonna take them up on that, man, and go hang out. I got friends in Sweden, friends in Switzerland, friends in Australia. I just want to go hang out with them, man, and see what things are like there.
Now, before we come into the end, but I wanted to ask you a couple it's one in particular that I just don't even get what the big damn deal is. What this Colin Kaepernick situation, because he didn't stand up for the national anthem. What is your take on that?
Man, my take on that is I'm proud of him for taking a stance, and I'm mad that nobody else is taking the stance along with him. He should be getting support. It should be at least 400 NFL players sitting down during the national anthem, and the crackers that are dogging him out they're like, he's saying I'm not for this hanging of black people, and the white people are saying, man, kick his butt off the team, man. To ignore it is to oppress. That's part of the oppressor. The oppressor is the one who doesn't say nothing about it, who will accept it. And if they can't recognize that it's a problem, then they have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And everywhere that I go, I got friends in Africa, man, that I talk to, and they ask me, how can you stay in the U.S.? Isn't it like apartheid? They're killing people in the streets and nobody goes to jail for it? I said, I never even thought about that. That is apartheid. They said, well, how can you accept that? And I said, I don't really know. I don't know how I can accept it. The people in different countries are seeing what's going on over here, and they think we are crazy for not going crazy against these white people, man.
Well, it's deep. It's deep. You know, my first thought was like, so damn what? He didn't stand up. I mean, what's the okay? And oh, You know, I've always taught my kids, don't, you know, you can stand up for the Pledge of Allegiance, but don't you say that shit. You just stand up, but don't say it.
Pledge of Allegiance. Yeah, so that's another thing that he's going to have to realize, you know, these are the people that's putting the millions in your pocket. So you do have to play the game for so long or you'll be ostracized, man. Remember Craig Hodges on the Bulls, man, got to the White House and told him he could solve some issues, man. He never played again, man.
Never played another game. Never played another game.
Yeah.
Wow. But I just wanted to throw that out there because it they keep using these scare tactics to get people to, because when they see you standing up and singing a song or putting your hand over your heart, then they know they still got your mind. But when you sit down like Colin did, then they start getting scared. Then people start waking up. They think he's gonna wake you up. So it's just a cycle. Just a cycle, a vicious cycle. Wow.
Right.
Well, Brother Joe, what we'll do? I'll give you a chance.
Who you got in this election, man? What do you think?
Oh well, I was for Bernie Sanders.
Of course.
There was a time.
Obvious choice.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. Now, in the beginning, I was saying, you know what, if Hillary Clinton is the best that they have to offer us, then maybe we deserve a Donald Trump. But I'm backing off of that. Just my common sense says, you know what, I'm going to go in that voting booth and I'm going to hold my nose and press that button for Hillary Clinton. You know?
Yeah. You know what?
I think
that Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump have been lifelong friends, man. They've been friends forever. I think they got Donald Trump to run so that Hillary Clinton would win. And Bernie Sanders got in there. He threw a monkey wrench in the game. And they had to pull some shenanigans to make him lose the election because he was picking up momentum fast. And he wasn't playing along with him. Donald Trump ain't gonna win, man. He's just something to put in there. So he's being so absurd and so obnoxious, saying this stuff just so people would say, "Oh man, no, we can't do him. We got to bring Hillary in, and she's like the best of two evils, man."
Yeah, well, I thought that at one time, because I even said on the show, I said, you know what, get braced, you all, to save President Trump. Because I really thought at one time that this man, they're going to see to it that he wins, but he's doing everything he can to make sure he doesn't win, whether he knows it or not. So Hillary's got this, you know, and I'm fortunate because in Texas, the gas price here is like $1.99 a gallon. I kind of like that. And, you know, when. Trump gets in there, man. We got Supreme Court justices that need to be nominated. I mean, you got to go with Hillary, man. I don't care. Nobody say. Yeah. That's my opinion.
And they give you the illusion of the inclusion, like you really have a voice in this election, man. We don't want that lady in. We don't want him in there. We ain't even a part of this, man. They got a plan, and they got it all planned out. They know who's going to win. This stuff is all, man, this is like the Matrix, man. It's the royal scam.
I agree. They know how it's going to be, and they're going to do whatever they need to do to make sure it turns out the way. That's how Bush got in. They made it happen, you know. So
yeah, man. I couldn't believe Bush won, man. I couldn't believe that.
I'll never forget that. That was crooked. But what we'll do, brother. Coming down to the close, I want to give you a chance to, you know, we make that closing statement, whatever you want to put out there from your heart and whatever way you want it to be received. I'm going to hand you the mic now and you can just let it roll, brother.
The only thing that I got to say is we have got to find out who we are. We have to raise our kids and our grandkids to let them know who we are and where we come from. The significance of them opening the African American Museum September 23rd in Washington, D.C. at the Smithsonian is going to be very important for us to visit and let our kids see and experience what slavery, what Jim Crow, what all that was about. And we got to find out and teach how we can solve this misdirection that we're heading in and try to move forward. We need more social scientists and less basketball players. We got to come together. We got to unite. We got to stop being the largest consumer and spend our money in our communities, man. And if people want to sell out, we got to kick them out. We got to hold these politicians accountable, man. Yeah,
I'm down with that. But, brother, I want to thank you for coming on again, man. I'm looking forward to hope everything works out with your new endeavor. And I hope when you get that together, you'll come on and we can talk about it, man.
Absolutely.
As always, I appreciate you coming on, and I will see you on Friday night at the Class of 76 reunion. And I encourage anybody to come out. Doesn't matter if you're from their class. Come out and support the class, man. Come out and support the Class of 76 and just show your love. You'll have a good time. I'll be there, and I'm looking forward to it. So, on that note, brother, I want to close out and just say, in the name of whomever or whatever is your spiritual power, peace and good night. Take care, Brother Joe.
All right, my brother. Peace.
All right. You have been listening to We Are Everyday People, Global Internet Radio Network. Peace.